When my wife and I first got married, we would take seasonal trips down to Florida once or twice a year, mostly for the great weather and also to get a little surfing in. We were both born and raised in California, grew up surfing, but didn't actually meet and get romantically involved until we were both living in the Midwest for work. The closest beach for our kind of recreation was just a hop and a skip away. We didn't have friends or family in Florida, so these trips were literally just for us, to satisfy our beach cravings, our desire for seafood, and even the urge to be out in the sun. Because we didn't have family to visit, we would just randomly select a different coastal town each trip and stay somewhere brand new every time we went down. Being young newlyweds, we weren't making a ton of income, and our savings were all but non-existent. We had to be cheap on these road trips, which meant no hotels, period. Not on the journey, and not after arriving in whatever town we picked previously. We drove a Subaru that had a decent amount of room in it, and we'd save several hundred dollars by just sleeping in it. This was my wife's method of curving our budget, and being an outdoorsman my entire life, I was on board from the moment she mentioned camping. My wife, Kat, didn't have traditional camping in mind though. This was the early 2000s, so stealth camping wasn't quite as mainstream as it is now. Kat had heard about stealth camping from a coworker, who was a cross-country bicyclist. Her coworker explained that while on these incredibly long pedaling trips, sometimes the only place to get safety and to get some rest is in a parking lot or the green belt between two businesses. Bikers would pack meager supplies, just enough to keep them going, and then supplement those supplies with whatever they could buy on the road. These bikers would carry light sleeping gear, maybe a tent or just a tarp, and rudimentary stuff like sun blinds or can openers to add a touch of convenience. So we start making this part of our Florida trips. We'd load up our Subaru with all kinds of odds and ends, things that I imagine Boy Scouts would pack. Toothpicks, lighters, a rope, sandwich bags, and batteries. All the little things that you don't really think about until you need them. Everything would be filed away in a neat little storage space, along with our bedding, to make for a perfect traveling sleep capsule. Kat even had dangling drapes that encircled the back area for privacy. For the better part of 4 years, we had zero issues with our urban stealth camping. The only problem that we encountered was that many of these coastal towns that we were visiting had pretty good curfews and ordinances, so we couldn't overnight in beach parking lots or in front of stores or businesses of any kind. So we had to find places where people parked on the street. And again, for these small coastal towns in Florida, this wasn't a common occurrence. Everyone had a garage or a driveway, so our little Subaru camper stuck out like a sore thumb. It never failed though. We would always find some little neighborhood or development where people did use the street. We'd blend in for a few days, maybe even a week, then hit the road for home. There were showers and facilities at the beach, all kinds of outdoor amenities. But the simple act of just finding a place to shack up for the night, that always proved to be the most difficult. Camping in plain sight actually takes a little bit more creativity than folks give us credit for. During one particular trip, we were having an impossible time trying to find a place to set up. It was our first night in town, and by this point in the evening, we've been driving in circles through the community for 3 hours, with absolutely no luck on an inconspicuous place to park. Finally though, after following some windy roads that took us through a more rural neighborhood, we found a little stretch between the beach and some houses where people did park on the road. We pulled in on one end, where the neighborhood stopped and the road snaked off into the dark, and called it home. We started on our usual bedtime routines, like brushing our teeth, washing our faces out of the water jug, getting comfy, locking the doors, and snuggling in for bed. There was a commotion outside though, as we heard walking around and a little talking. Soon someone was climbing into the car that was parked nearest to us, maybe 250 feet behind us, far away enough that we weren't really concerned. They fire up the car and roll off down the lane, only to leave us pretty much alone out there on the street. There was now only one other car parked on the roadway, and it was hundreds of feet behind us. I was worried that they'd be leaving any minute now. Getting a ticket wasn't really in our budget. Kat and I discussed our options, but we were kind of trapped. After driving all day, only to drive even more around town, we didn't have it in us to start the car and look for a more populated area. As we were talking though, our prayers were answered. From the front windshield, we could see a pair of headlights cut up the road the opposite direction and stop somewhere ahead of us. I climbed up and pulled the curtains back, only to find a big dusty van parked about 75 feet off. The second I saw it, though, I got this weird feeling from the bottom of my feet, the top of my throat. Something was off, and I let my wife know immediately. She popped up herself, took one look at it, and then got back under the covers. She said it was creepy, but we were in the middle of a neighborhood, and that was the whole point. We were safe and needed to be incognito, not be suspicious and draw attention to any passing vehicle. She was right, and frankly, I admired her for her undaunted courage. But I didn't like the van, nor how close it was to us. From my place behind the curtain, I watched someone fire up a cigarette in the driver's seat of the van and proceed to smoke it while looking right at our car. I couldn't do it. I told Kat that I was going to sit watch for a bit because everything was just a little creepy. She said whatever, rolled over, and then promptly passed out. I slithered up into the front seat and got comfy behind the wheel. We were parked against the moon and had a decent tint. I was wearing dark clothing, kind of a perfect storm for not being seen behind the windshield. The whole time I just watched this hand go back and forth with the cherry of the cigarette. No smoke escaped the window, not even a whisper. Anyone smoking with the windows up is a total psycho if you ask me. That being said, my paranoia was now at an all-time high, and to this day I've never been so suspicious of a person, but I couldn't let it rest. After 30 or 40 minutes of just staring that van down, I finally decided that I was going to go for the long haul. I'd see the sunrise if I had to, whatever it took to make sure this guy went away. I got the jet boil, the percolator, everything I would need to make a quick, quiet pot of coffee. I set the whole thing up outside the car, on the ground on the passenger side, so I could stay somewhat hidden from anyone driving by or looking out from their window. I also wanted to force the action. I got tired of watching that van and waiting for something to happen, so I got out and essentially offered a challenge to anyone that wanted to mess with us. Here I am, out in the open, no tricks to be pulled. I watched the night sky, listened to the heat whirring beside me. Then I heard the click and slam of a car door opening and closing. I look over and there's that guy from the van, awkwardly staring at me across that 75-foot gap. And then almost immediately, he starts walking right toward me, one hand in his pocket. He didn't seem panicked or intimidating or anything, just the energy of a man running an errand. I, on the other hand, was low-key tripping out just underneath my skin. This was what I wanted to happen with my open challenge to the world, right? But now, he was coming over. I realized that I bit off a little more than I can chew, and now I was about to choke. I took a deep breath just before he got within earshot, reminded myself that everything was fine. I had a 14-inch Bowie knife laying in the dirt beside me, something my wife and I traveled with everywhere we went. I was going to use it, hopefully to scare this guy off at the first sign of trouble, and if not, bury it in his chest before he could kill me or my wife. He gets within 25 feet and just stands there, more of that awkward energy. The more the guy does, the more strange that he seems. His hands go in and out of his pockets. He pushes his hair back a few times, and then finally comes over within talking distance. He says, "Hello," and asks me how's it going. We share some very brief small talk before he asks me for some matches. The only matches that we had are in the car, but I do have a lighter for the jet boil, so I hand it over and explain that he can just keep it. He seems blown away by this, like he's never received a kinder act of generosity, continues to thank me over and over again. After a string of thank yous comes to a final end, he goes back to just awkwardly standing there. That's when it occurs to me how big this dude is, 6'2" at the very least. He's broad too, a well-built fella, but it was so dark that his dimensions were hard to discern at first. Now that I sized him up, I was a little uncomfortable again. His awkwardness came off as apprehension, like maybe he was about to jump me or something. You better believe that I had that knife tucked in my waistband, just underneath my shirt. It was still in the sheath, so honestly, it would have been a pain to get out and use, but having it close was relieving. I poured two cups of coffee in the disposable throwaway cups that me and my wife used. I offered up one to the guy. I told him that I was staying awake for a bit for a photography shot, as I was an amateur photographer. This part was actually true, but there wasn't any shot that I was looking for. This was just an up and down lie, short of the being an amateur photographer part. That's about the time that this guy decided to dive into his backstory. The stranger told me his name, something I still don't remember, and that he'd very recently been released from prison. He was moving along the coastline on his way to Miami, where he had a job lined up. I nodded along, more interested than you could believe. I could have easily earned an Academy Award with the performance that I put on. Like, I was this guy's old high school coach, and he was catching me up on his life or something. Honestly, I wasn't paying attention to what he was saying at all. I was all caught up in a panic, letting one hand rest near the knife in my waistband while looking for signs of aggression in his body language. None ever came, but I was still on high alert. I told the guy that I wished him luck and was going to be turning in soon myself. He said thanks again, then milled around the area for a little bit longer, before climbing back into his own van. I saw him light another cigarette, just went back to lounging in the van. For whatever reason, continued to stare at us. Red flags and alarms had been going off in my head all night, but here I was, somewhere around 2 in the morning, and hadn't slept any yet. My interaction with that guy was very creepy, but nothing so scary that I needed to run in the other direction. I convinced myself that he was a guy just down on his luck, while I put my coffee supplies away, then slipped into the front seat. I watched the area for a few minutes, before deciding to turn in. But just as I turned to climb back into the bed space with Kat, something caught my eye. I saw movement along the vegetation between the road and the beach. A shadow at first, but soon, I could make out the undeniable figure of a man, one even larger than the guy that I was just talking to. He skulked along the underbrush until he was level with the van, then crossed in front of it and climbed into the passenger seat. He was very careful with the handle, as I couldn't hear it open nor latch when he silently pulled it closed. Guy was going the extra mile to make sure that no one knew that he was out there. Great, not one but two ex-convicts roaming around not 100 feet from where my wife and I are trying to sleep. I slammed the key into the ignition and flooded the area with my high beams. Right there in front of me, I could see both guys sitting in front seats of the van, and they gave me a creepy, rotten grin through the glass. The driver held up the lighter and waved it back and forth at me. My wife asked me what the hell was going on, but I just shifted the car into drive and whipped around to get deeper into town. The logical thing would have been to blow right past them, so I hadn't been down the stretch of road, and that was literally where they'd come from, but we were definitely more familiar. If I was going to have an advantage, it would be to go where town thickened up and more people could intervene. I'll never forget looking up through my rear view and through the flailing fabrics of the blind, seeing that van peel off the shoulder and come rolling after us. They didn't turn their headlights on, but simply followed along in the dark. I could only see the grill and the headlights by the glow of my red backlights. It was a very haunting visual. I did my best to quickly explain to Kat what the hell was going on, all while she's sliding from wall to wall in the back of the car. I told her that the guy in the van was released from prison this week, and had a friend that he didn't mention sneaking around in the dark around our car. As he didn't mention him, I assume his intentions were probably not good. He was likely casing our situation, seeing if we had anything of value, that kind of thing. It only took Kat one peek out of the back window, where she saw the glowing silver grill of that van coming up right behind us, for her to agree that I made the right call. It was time to get the hell out of there, and we had to do it now. Fortunately for us, the neighborhood led right into a well-lit community. Suddenly, that dusty piece of shit van wasn't so scary behind us. They actually looked like assholes, racing and squealing around. They backed off after barely a quarter of a mile and looped back into the darkness near the beach. I drove us to the nearest pharmacy, parked under a light pole, and did my best to fall asleep. The worst case scenario would be waking up to a ticket, but at that point, I was just lucky to not have been robbed. We lucked out yet again, as Kat and I just snoozed away the morning and woke up without incident. We caught the best lunch that we've ever had in a local surf deli. The cold cuts were unbelievable. We didn't see that van again, and frankly, kind of lost interest in self-camping. It's been hotels and Airbnbs for us ever since. Personally, I've only ever gone stealth camping one time, and it was during a two-day drive between where I was going to college and my hometown. The drive itself was about 20 hours. And the town that was smack dab in the middle of that drive was Moab, Utah. I had never been to Moab, but I guess maybe driven through it once. But I'd heard about it just like we all have, that it's paradise for rock climbers, rock crawlers, off-roaders, and outdoorsmen in general. I grew up hiking and camping, so I was kind of excited to see what the town would have to offer for a passerby. As I was planning this trip, I was trying to keep it as cheap as possible. As I mentioned earlier, I was in college at the time, and this was my first trip home for the holidays. I was kind of feeling everything out in terms of what this trip would cost, so I could properly budget out for the future. My first budget cut would be a hotel room. I was driving my old Jeep Cherokee, and Moab was such an outdoor-friendly community. I figured there would be a plethora of campgrounds in that area. I'd just roll into one for one quick overnight for 5 or 6 hours. The day finally came. I packed up my Jeep and hit the road. Everything went exactly to my plan, cutting through the miles until finally, right down at sunset, I got within 10 or 20 miles of Moab. It was so plain out there. No trees or forest from what I could see in the fading sunlight. I didn't worry though. I figured I'd be sleeping in my car anyway. I didn't need trees or forest to do that. By the time I got into Moab, though, it was completely dark. I didn't have any idea where to go in terms of camping. This was well before smartphones, so all I had were the Google Map printouts, which I had used to piece together a rough idea. Soon, I had a campground pegged, one just outside of town along the beautiful stretch of the Colorado River. To my memory, it was called Goose Nest Campground, something like 2 miles east of the town limits. Yes, I'd Googled if there were campgrounds, but what I failed to learn was that these were paid for, highly sought after campgrounds. I couldn't just roll into one and use it. The second I did this, I had multiple campers from other units walking me down with flashlights, asking to see a permit or some kind of paperwork, anything saying that I paid to be there. It was probably to keep out the riffraff, and after this happening to me 2 or 3 times, I was too spooked to stick around. I didn't feel friendly, and I thought I was ruining a peaceful night for all these campers, not expecting a stranger to come driving through their area. After getting ran out of those campgrounds, I cruised back into Moab, decided I would just sleep in the parking lot, something like a Walmart or a Denny's, where there's a 24-hour bathroom. I didn't really need comfortable living, I just needed basic stuff to get me to morning. I was really banking on sleeping in the middle of nowhere, but my experience thus far had me hesitant to even go off-roading. Who knows what kind of shit I'd come up on out there. There was no luck for me in town either. The place was crawling with crackheads and weirdos. Every parking lot that I investigated had at least one unsavory looking guy, if not 5 or 6 of them, shuffling around, up to no good. This was not what I had in mind for such a well-known destination. Absolutely defeated, I decided that I would sleep in the middle of nowhere. I got my Jeep back on the highway, and rolled maybe 3 miles south of town, and hooked onto the first dirt road that I saw. There was a little cattle guard laid in between some barbed wire fencing, but aside from that, the place was wide open. There were some bluffs that I couldn't see over, so I just decided to park along the little ridge that partially blocked my car. Still very cautious of my surroundings, I decided to drape one of my blankets that I had across the windshield and the front windows to keep unwanted eyes outside of my cab. Then I insulated myself up front, with my legs across the console and butt in the driver's seat, my back against the door, and placed my feet in the passenger seat. It definitely wasn't the most comfy thing ever, but I had a lot of stuff packed in the back. Plus, I wanted to be ready if anything got weird. I got to my spot just in time around 9 p.m., way later than I originally planned. My new plan was to catch some quick sleep and be up by 4, get myself ready and back in town. Gas up, and then be back on the highway at sunrise around 5 a.m. It was bare minimum, but again, that was all I needed to get through. Literally basic survival stuff. something rumbled me awake in the early hours, just before the time that I wanted to be awake. I cracked an eye open, and outside the Jeep was a big dirt hauler, some kind of tractor truck. It was idling, and just around the blanket curtain that I'd put up, I could see a guy looking down at me from the cab. Not a minute later, he rumbled off into the desert, around one of the bluffs, and then disappeared. I didn't put much more thought into it and just tried to go back to sleep. I figured it was some kind of laborer of some kind, and this was his pickup route. A truck that size wasn't up to anything spooky. Not but 30 minutes later, I hear banging on the passenger side window. I crack an eye open and check my watch, just shy of when my alarm was going to go off. I assumed that I was about to get shooed off by the police or maybe the Forest Service, as the timing would line up with the truck that just drove off by earlier. I yanked the blanket down to find an old beater Chevy outside, with a guy staring holes through the glass at me. I started to wave, but before I could, someone bangs on the window directly behind my head. They banged on it so hard that it rattled my teeth, and I slowly began to realize that I'm completely surrounded. I turn, and sure enough, there's another guy that looks a lot like the first. Plain t-shirt, Levi's, boots. They both start hollering for me to get out of the car. For whatever reason, I obliged. I wanted understanding, just to let these guys know that I was just passing through. I meant no harm. This turned out to be a huge mistake on my part. The second that I unlocked the vehicle, the guys yanked both doors open, pulled me out of the car by my arms and my shoulders. Once they had me on the ground, one sat on me while the other went through everything that I had, starting with my glove box. Saying it was a thorough investigation would be an understatement. I watched while this guy turned my front seats upside down, dumped my glove box and console in the dirt, pocketed anything that I had of value, coins, electronics, you name it. I swear I even saw him take my push-in lighter, just because it was shiny. I explained to the guy that was holding me down, I'm a college student, I'm from out of town, I didn't mean any trouble, I was just lost and trying to get some sleep before hitting the road again. The guy literally mocked everything that I said, repeated it back to me in a stupid voice, even slapped me a few times, all while laughing. He didn't care who I was or where I was from. After a few more minutes, the sun crested the hills. Everything was lit up. I don't know how, but I could tell that that made these guys nervous. I could hear cars on the highway, which I thought were closer during the night. And now that I could see it, it was a good quarter mile away from the main stretch of road. How these guys had found me, I couldn't really be sure. I thought I'd done a pretty damn good job of hiding out. Eventually, after 10 or 15 minutes of being pinned to the ground, they just took off. They instructed me not to follow them, not to call the police or do anything stupid, because if I did, they'd come back and kill me. They were very, very clear about this when they said it to me. Either way, I'd already made up my mind. They didn't really take much from me, mostly just some food and what little cash I had in front with me. After making sure I was okay and intact, I got back in my Jeep, whipped back towards Moab. It took me a bit, but after making a couple of laps, I found the police department, went in and made a report. At first, they were pretty dismissive, as I was a college-age student, an out-of-state license, and dirty as hell. I probably looked like a crazy vagrant. Only after I explained where this happened did the officers seem to take a little more interest. "You said south of town? How far?" one of the deputies asked me. I did my best to explain exactly where I pulled off on the road. The deputy turned back to his superiors and they talked for a moment, going over some notes of prior reports. It turned out that the guys that had robbed me had been making trouble around town for a couple of weeks, and most, if not all, the reports were coming from the south side of town. Furthermore, the dirt road that I pulled off on to get some sleep, well, that road led to a pretty big ranching outfit, and I don't mean a dude ranch resort, but a real agricultural facility. They even had a mine out there on the property, hence the big Mack truck that rolled by me in the early morning hours. Well, a couple of guys that had been sneaking in and out of the ranch, usually in the middle of the night. They would come in empty-handed, stumble around the property until they turned on some lights or tripped an alarm. Then they would go scurrying back out into the desert with whatever they could grab. Tools, copper, raw ore, building materials, literally anything they could sell into turning a couple of bucks. My misfortune turned into a stroke of luck for the local police department. I took them out to where my incident took place, and from there, the sheriff's department was able to track these assholes down by the end of the day. They found them holed up in a little cave in a wash that intersected with the river. They had water storage, a fire pit, all kinds of stuff to give them actually a livable, decent life. The issue is, they all pillaged locals and travelers like me to get it all. Not after that day, I got all my stuff back, which, as I said, wasn't really that much. Maybe $50 total, along with some of my personal stuff like blankets. I have no idea what happened to all those men, but I'm sure the camp was cleaned up, missing items returned to owners, and everything else dumped in the trash. From there, I'm sure those dudes got locked up, and I went about my business. Like I said in the beginning, this was my first and only time stealth camping, and I can confidently tell you, I'll never ever do it again. A few years ago, my wife and I were going to go visit her sister somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. We're an older couple, but not ancient, not even retired, so we make up all trips like this pretty often. Recently though, or at least within the last 5 years or so, we've been hearing about a new fad called stealth camping. My wife and I thought this was funny, as we'd done this kind of thing for years, across many different states and many different cities. I'll admit we were fascinated though. We found all kinds of YouTubers and TikTok streamers, people coming up with new ways to camp in more and more populated areas. Some of the stuff that we were seeing was genius, cutting edge kind of thinking, and some of the other content that we found was very daring, the type of dangerous content that made purely for shock and views. Attempting to camp in crime-ridden areas, attempting to camp without a car or a tent, just crazy, ludicrous attempts at getting views. Regardless of it all, we liked what we were seeing, started incorporating this into our cross-country trips. We started simple at first, just sleeping in the car in well-lit parking lots, then slowly transitioned into more isolated methods of camping. Instead of sleeping in a Walmart parking lot, we'd find a luxury condo, or maybe even a gated community, somewhere with a little more security. We'd follow someone inside, find a nice, non-reserved parking place, and sleep away the night without anyone knowing. Dawn would come and we'd get ourselves ready, roll right out the exit gate as if we'd lived there our whole lives. It was a lot of fun and always made for some mild excitement. Now, stealth camping isn't quite the same as boondocking, which was something else that my wife and I had done. Boondocking is just breaking camp in the middle of nowhere, generally public land, and that doesn't have services or any amenities. It's essentially just typical camping. We liked a stealth camp because it kept you in town limits, and you didn't actually have to get anything set up. You got to utilize your car in a way that you normally don't get to. Well, after a year of exploring and experimenting in the great fad of stealth camping, we decided to try something new on this trip when we visited my sister-in-law. Instead of just using a car, we were going to actually find a place within town and city limits to set up a little camp and sleep outdoors. We'd seen enough videos and practiced enough on our own to feel confident we could get away with it. Looking back, I don't know what the hell we were thinking. This was some ultimate bored, middle-aged white people activities, if such a thing ever existed. Everything on this trip was going good at first. We stopped 3 or 4 nights at this point, all of which were successful outdoor ventures. Now we were actually in the city, needed to be careful with the place that we chose. After getting some food and stretching out our legs, we started shopping around for a place to set up. It wasn't long before we spotted this quaint little green belt behind a Target store. It had ominous fencing that didn't actually have a warning of any kind. There was grass and a line of trees, even a little hill to offer a vantage point. By and large, it seemed absolutely perfect. It would make for the most high-profile stealth camping adventure for us yet. Now, you can't just go in and start setting up full camp with people around. We'd have to make several trips to and from our car, so we wanted the business nearby to be closed, the parking lot to be empty, and a healthy blanket of darkness settled over us. We killed some time, ran some basic errands, made sure we had food and water for the night before returning, and sure enough, the place had emptied out, and we were left to do our business. We didn't have a ton of supplies or anything, but we liked to be comfortable, and didn't want to have to return to our car for any reason. As I've been saying, we took it pretty seriously, compared every step of our camping to some videos that we'd seen. We knew all of this had to be safe and secret, so we held ourselves to a certain standard. At the end of the day, though, it was a lot of fun and something to tell our friends about. The camp itself was tucked into a thicket of trees about halfway up that hill, which kept our tent out of view from pretty much every direction. It was a dark nylon two-person tent, and so small that it blended in perfectly with the surroundings. Up where the trees were a little flat area to put the tent, which also had a two-person cot inside. It was very comfortable and kept us off the ground, which did preserve our backs a bit. Again, we're older. You can't blame us for preventing the aches and pains, if able to. We settle into a couple collapsible chairs that we brought along. We spared no luxury with the isolation that we had back there. We talked in hushed voices, shared a snack and had a little wine, and just watched the sky. It was relaxing, very mellow. You almost couldn't tell that we were in the heart of a major metropolitan area. Somewhere behind us, we could faintly hear the drone of the highway. But then we heard something much closer, tires squealing through the parking lot. The hill wasn't so high that we couldn't see over the Target building, but it was obvious that some kid just whipped in the lot, was doing donuts or something to that effect. Every time that we thought it would stop, they would just cut the wheel and gun it in the other direction. It was very off-putting, but not quite enough to be scared or anything. Our car was parked out there, but there were a few other cars too. Random lot overnighters, maybe even graveyard shift workers. There was a stretch in numbers that hopefully whoever this was would be careful enough not to crash into any of the cars. It quieted down after a while, and soon my wife and I were getting ready for bed. There's something about sitting in the dark, especially outdoors, that just drains my battery. It could be 7 p.m. and I'd tell you it was midnight. I just lose all sense of time and want to be asleep the whole time I'm out there. Just as soon as we're getting ready to break down the chairs and go inside our tent, we hear that same car come ripping through the parking lot once again. Except this time, it comes to a screeching halt. My wife and I look at each other. That's new. Then we hear a car door open and shut. A second one. Then we hear footsteps, voices. Everything is getting louder. My wife and I look at each other in total terror as two strangers pull the fence back and start wandering right into the green belt that we're hiding in. We can hear them clearly now. They aren't talking about anything nice or friendly, mostly violence and drug use. I couldn't believe this was actually happening. My wife starts to get up, but I stopped her, whispered for her to stay put. The trees had us totally blocked from view. The only way that we'd be found was through sound. The less movement, the less likely that we'd be caught. She sat back, put a hand over her mouth and just waited. Thankfully, those voices slowed down as the two strangers stopped short of where we were lingering, down in that flat area before the hill. There was a big fallen tree down there too, bigger around than a car tire, and made for a good bench. I considered camping next to it earlier, but found it too close to the fence for comfort. And thank God that we didn't do that, or we would have been discovered almost immediately. Now we just listened to these guys talk for a while. Obviously, we didn't know their names, so I'll just refer to them as Guy 1 and the Loud Guy. Guy 1 was only a little softer spoken, but talked at such a fast speed that we had a hard time keeping up with him. I'll try to recreate as much of the conversation as I can remember. At first, they were just talking about doing drugs and getting high, partying. But eventually, the talks turned into violence. Stuff they'd done, stuff they wanted to do. And this eventually led them to why they were out there in the first place. "Damn, dude, what time is it? Is he even coming or what?" the loud guy asked. Yeah, he said he'd be late. He's always late. Can't wait to do this," Guy 1 said. "Yeah, me too, man. Dude's a scumbag," loud guy agreed. Now they start trailing off about how they were supposed to meet a third person, a drug dealer of some kind. They were going to rip him off right back here. Apparently, they'd bought from this guy pretty regularly, but his prices went up and his consistency had gone down. Addiction turned to desperation, and both of those turned into anger for Loud Guy and Guy 1. Anger that they planned on using to utilize to rob the person that was causing their problems, or at least so they reasoned. We definitely didn't like what we were hearing, but our options were limited. We were outgunned against these goons, and we had no interest in running them off or tangling up in any way. I had a gun, naturally, but that was an absolute last resort. It was an unspoken agreement that we could just hide, stay quiet, and wait out whatever the hell was about to happen. The second it was clear, we'd call the police and get the hell out. The two goons kept talking about all kinds of creepy, colorful stuff. My wife ended up covering her ears because it was so gross. Beyond locker room talk, but the truly heinous daydreams of the criminally deprived minds. After a while, we heard footsteps approaching from the outside. I prayed for a security guard or someone, but it turned out to be the long-awaited drug dealer. Showtime. They all started exchanging pleasantries, shaking hands. This part actually felt almost cool, as my wife and I were the only ones privy to what was really going on, or at least so we thought. The conversations then turned to business. Loud guy starts to inquire about their purchase, and drug dealer pulls a gun out of his jacket and points it right in loud guy's face. "What the hell, man?" he screams. "You didn't say he'd have a gun." "There's a lot I didn't tell you," guy one says. "Now empty out your pockets." This whole exchange was a double setup, as guy one was never going to rob the drug dealer, but was actually in cahoots with him. Then the second gun came out. They shouldered up, and loud guy immediately realized that he was done for. His only option was to get louder and louder, which for him came pretty easy. They didn't let it happen, though. My wife almost gave us up when the drug dealer pistol-whipped that loud guy not once, but twice. Got really quiet. Guy one rolled him over, started working him over, checking his pockets, then literally hog-tying him. Loud guy started to grumble again. How we thought they were friends. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Guy one took a filthy rag from the culvert ditch and stuffed it inside his mouth. Talk about cold-hearted. After that, drug dealer and guy one went through the contents of loud guy's pockets. They even took his shoes and his socks off, where I guess the real haul was found. From what we could hear, they came upon $900 in cash, half an ounce of cocaine, and also had piano wire in his pockets, apparently a tool of his. Then the worst thing that you can imagine happened. My wife's whole body lurched, her eyes went wide, and she let out the loudest sneeze that you can imagine. I froze, totally shocked at what just happened. My first instinct was to say something like, "What the hell?" But I knew that would only add to the fire that we just started. She put a hand over her mouth and nose and did her best not to breathe. She has wicked allergies in the Pacific Northwest. We had forgotten all about it in the moment, and now it just got us busted. I watched through the trees as all three heads, even the guy tied up on the ground, slowly turned up to look in our position. The drug dealer even briefly pointed the gun up at us. We didn't move. We didn't give up exactly where we were. We knew the hill was dark and shrouded, especially where our tent was. Much to our surprise, the drug dealer and guy one started to backpedal towards the parking lot. They shouted a few threats, talked some tough guy shtick, and even threw some more shade on loud guy, who still tied up on the ground. My wife and I kept still as they slowly disappeared through the fence and around the side of the building. They hopped inside guy one's car, the squealing menace from earlier, as we realized we never actually heard the drug dealers arrive in a vehicle. We surmised that he must have walked from some nearby location to eliminate loose ends. The car tore out of the parking lot, left us alone in that green belt. Alone, except for loud guy, who was aggressively rolling back and forth at the bottom of the hill. We could hear him grunting, struggling to get free, but it was no use. After 20 minutes or so, he finally gave up, panting, face down in the dirt. I honestly think he passed out from exhaustion. My wife and I wasted no time, immediately started breaking down camp. The chairs first, then tucked in all our loose equipment into the cooler, like a big stacked up pile. We took the tent apart as quietly as we could, careful not to step on anything that might give us away. Once that was rolled up, we were ready to break for our car. We heard something, though. Loud guy was starting to fight with his bindings again, except this time, he was clearly making some progress. It wasn't more than a few seconds later, and suddenly, his arms were free, which moved down quickly to get his ankles undone. Soon he popped up muttering to himself, brushing the dirt off his clothes. My wife and I were frozen. We had no idea what the hell to do. We were already scared enough at just the prospect of trying to walk by this dude, but now he was up and free. He took one final look around the greenbelt, then bolted for the parking lot. We stood and listened to his fading footfalls until we couldn't hear them anymore, then stood and listened some more. We weren't in much of a rush to get caught by any of these people. It was just by pure luck that none of them had come up the hillside to see who or what we were. Once we were positive that everyone was gone, we huffed all of our stuff out to the car and dialed 911 and hit the road. My wife made a full, thorough report, all except for the fact that we were camping behind Target. The dispatcher assured my wife that lots of calls came out of this part of town. Apparently, we'd been trying to camp in one of the more crime-ridden areas of the city. We'd never heard anything more about the trio of drug-dealing turncoats. And believe it or not, my wife and I continued to stealth camp after that. We just upped our game, like we always do. We do way more research now, as the internet has made it much easier to avoid crazy encounters just like that. That night, we caved and got a hotel just to avoid any further chaos. If you're gonna stealth camp, be quiet, be careful, and be prepared for anything. Hey everyone, thanks for listening if you stuck around to this point. If you haven't yet, please hit the like button, the subscribe button, and that notification bell to be notified when future episodes come out. If you have a true scary story of your own, feel free to send it to my email or post it to my subreddit. You can stalk me on Twitter X, X Twitter, or you can stalk me on Instagram. All of these links are below. Hey everybody, hey everyone, how are you all doing? I really, really, really like this episode. I don't think I've ever even seen another narrator or horror narrator, at least in the community, doing what I do and others do. Do this topic about stealth camping. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is somebody out there. I just haven't seen it for myself, but I really like this one, and I'm hoping that it does well and that you guys like it as well, so that we can continue and start making this more of a regular thing. I think the rest of the month we got out some more really good topics and stuff lined up for you for sure. I'm really excited, but I'm really excited about this one. And please let me know what you about. Please let me know what you think in the comments below. If you liked it, if you hated it, if you're going to burn your phone or computer now because it was that bad, talk about the things that I mispronounced, talk about whatever, talk about the things you like. I don't know. I thought all three of these stories were pretty solid. The whole idea of stealth camping is kind of intriguing to me. I myself even watch a few channels on YouTube that do similar stuff to like this. It's mostly the ones that are out in the elements, like braving the winter storms in a cozy little, whatever they call those vans, those sprinter vans. I don't know. The whole thought of it's cool. And I've watched a couple of videos where people have experienced maybe potentially some weird shit that's happened. So I'm like, there's got to be stories out there of people that are experiencing some weird shit and experiencing more often than not weird people. So yeah, here we are. Again, just let me know if you like this. I really would like this. Really would like to make this into a more regular thing and doing this theme more often, because camping and deep woods and all that stuff tends to do well on my channel anyway. So I figured, these are pretty close on topic wise. Like it's damn near the same thing, but not the same thing. It's different enough. It's also, again, one of those topics that not everybody's doing. So I'd like it to become kind of my thing, maybe, I don't know. That's just where my head's at with it. But you guys pretty much are driving the car just as much as I am sometimes. So you let me know what you like and what you don't like. And if you want to continue doing this, I think that's it. I don't have anything else, so I'm going to let you go. You guys have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next week. Again, going to continue to reiterate this probably occasionally, at least once a week. It might not always be Tuesday, Thursday uploads. Like, again, this week, just like last week, it's Wednesday and Friday. It's just when I can get to it and when it makes sense for me with my schedule, and that's just how it worked this week. There will always be two episodes. You just don't know when they're going to be. So surprise, it's Wednesday, Thursday, or Wednesday, Friday this week. Next week, who knows? Could be Monday and Sunday. Anyway, see you next week. Cheers.